For most of a day, I'd been climbing a sharp incline of rocks and shale toward an outcropped ledge that would afford a better view than anywhere else in this strange land. Finally, scrambling up the last 20 feet, I stepped out on that ledge and looked. What I saw took my breath away. There it lay, stretched out against the horizon as far as I could see, the thing I'd been warned about, the thing I'd been told was ultimately unavoidable. The sight of it was even more devastating than I'd feared. Here I was, hoping to travel to that distant, shining city, a world of wonders I absolutely had to reach. For my first 30 years, I'd never even dreamed such a place existed. Then, when I started to believe it might, I tried like the devil to avoid thinking about it, for reasons I still don't understand. And now, here I stood, all hopes of reaching that magical place dashed. Before me lay the biggest obstacle imaginable. No, it was absolutely unimaginable. That great yawning chasm sucked all hope from my heart. An abyss of staggering proportions. I had once stood with my family, when I had one, gazing down into the Grand Canyon. For a few minutes, I had been swept away by its grandeur before needing to pack up the kids, grab a hamburger, and get to the hotel. But this endless rift, this hole in the universe, made the Grand Canyon appear, in comparison, like the grave I dug when 10 years old to bury my old dog Ranger. It seemed infinitely large, deep and foreboding, containing not a shred of beauty. The chasm meant that the city calling to me from afar lay forever out of my reach. All that mattered for me now was that place I could still glimpse on the horizon, far beyond the impassable barrier spread out below me. I had to get there. I had to reach that stunning capital of a great undiscovered country, that shining city that rested on the great white mountain, the place named Caris. My name is Nick Seagrave. My story is true, though what world it happened in is hard for me to say. The memories burn in my brain, more real and weighty than what we call the real world. Before I tell you the incredible events that unfolded next, what happened to me at that chasm, I must first take you back to explain what led up to the moments I have just described. Only then can you understand me and my story, and perhaps unfold its meaning. I remember like it was yesterday that moment when I caught my first glimpse of Caris, glimmering in the distance. Initially, I thought the remote city seemed cold, even oppressive. Our band of travelers that day had rounded a bend shaded by rock towers, and suddenly, there it was, off to the west, rising high on a ridge. Silently, we all stared at it. From where we stood, all we could see between us and the mountain crowned by Caris were rolling green hills scrawled with various pathways, including a ribbon of red. This was the so-called Red Road I'd first learned of in some ancient inscriptions in a cave I'd entered one evening to escape a pounding rain and a crashing thunderstorm, and something far worse. But that is another story to tell another time. As my traveling companions and I continued absorbing our first glimpse of the faraway city on the summit, it took only a moment for my heightened vision to pierce its walls. How could this happen? I can't explain it, but I was as certain of my perception as I could be. My intuition told me that the light was but a ruse, that inside the city all was dank and shadowy. And enthroned there sat a dreadful, intolerant tyrant, squashing creativity and initiative, enslaving any subjects foolish enough to enter the city. I envisioned him granting his slaves freedom enough to make a mistake just so he could condemn them for it and command their execution. I'd long ago learned to trust my instincts, which had helped make me such a successful businessman and entrepreneur. And those prized instincts assured me this city was a monument to the pride of some self-proclaimed glory-hungry sovereign who delighted in robbing men of their dignity. A strangely confident assessment for one who knew so little. But if I lacked something in those days, it was not confidence. As this insight percolated within me, our silence was broken by one of my companions, a white-haired, craggy-faced man they called Shadrach, dressed in a tattered toga. "Behold," he said, air moving through a gap in his teeth, "Charis, the city of light." Light? What about the shadows I felt certain lay within? How could that old geezer be fool enough to trust that light on the outside meant light within? Then suddenly, another traveler, a young African woman named Malaiki, her face glowing, gasped, "Do you hear it? Music." I heard nothing. Who was she trying to trick, and why? With enchanting fervor, Malaiki exclaimed, "Songs of life and learning, choruses of pleasure and adventure in 1,000 languages." She broke into dancing, soon joined by some of the others. Were they trying to make fools of themselves? The uncomfortable thought struck me that perhaps I, Nick Seagrave, envied them, wishing I had a reason to dance. I quickly pushed that thought away. Even as they twirled and high-stepped, they kept looking toward the city. Following their gaze, I found my perception changing, despite my resistance. The coldness of the place was gradually replaced by light and warmth and by what seemed to be the radiant energy of people celebrating. The city began to shimmer on the horizon, touched by sparkling blues and greens and golds that blended with the sky and sunlight, pulsing in and out of my vision. Soon, I too could hear music from the city, and then what sounded like a geyser of laughter exploding from a fountain of joy.